Okay, our first speaker, the second speaker, is Leslie Nichols. Leslie is the associate director. She is the co-chair of the 100th Anniversary Committee, first of all, and she is associate director for research translation of NIOSH. Her background is in industrial hygiene, but she's also done a lot of work about the history of Alice Hamilton, and that's what we're going to hear about.
Okay, so thank you. Thank you. So first I have to say that I have nothing to disclose. Second, I'll say I'm an amateur historian like some of the other people on the panel, but really enjoy this part of the work. I will also, the first session I went to, they acknowledged the person that the session was sponsored after, and I thought that was really nice. I would say the Kober was about 20 years before Alice Hamilton, and I think the most relevant piece that he brings to the work that I'm interested in is that he did write this 50-year history, and it's really wonderful. So if you have a chance to read this 50-year history of industrial hygiene in the section, I would strongly encourage you to do that. What I'm going to talk about today is Alice Hamilton and the Illinois Survey, Shifting Paradigms and Documenting Workplace Disease. So first I'm going to talk a little bit about the Illinois Survey, what it was and what it hoped to accomplish, and then I'm going to talk about Alice Hamilton and why she was named the principal investigator of that study. I will also say that Christopher Sellers, I don't know how many of you know Christopher Sellers' work. You do, yeah. He's written a fabulous dissertation and book about this actually very topic, this shifting paradigm, and he focuses on four people that were part of that change from the late 19th century into the 20th century and how we started looking at exposure versus disease and that change in history. So the report I'm going to talk about is actually called Report of Commission on Occupational Diseases to the Governor of Illinois, Charles Denis. The Illinois Survey was first commissioned in 1909. The purpose of the study was to determine the extent of occupational illness in Illinois. And I put a picture of Illinois up there so you can see exactly how big it is. I think it was a pretty significant task that they had asked people to do. And because of that, they really tried to focus on a somewhat narrow set of things that they were going to look at, and they decided to look at the chemicals and chemical exposures. They looked at a few other things too, but that was really the primary focus of their work. Focused on industry and occupation rather than the disease, and the approach was really based on the principles of industrial hygiene. They took the principles of industrial hygiene and applied it to developing the scope of their study. So what was the charge? This comes from the report, but really the first four bullets are primarily address the reason for the creating this commission was to, one, study the health and safety and the commitment to employees, that employees were the most important part, one of the most important aspects of work and workplaces, industry, and that there needed to be some understanding of what the health and safety for those employees were. Second, that illness results in poverty to the individual, and it is not very good for the production in the industry as well. Disease is preventable. And fourth, it made information on health and safety available to all citizens. So that was what the commission that was convened identified as the four main principles for creating this work. They were also charged with thoroughly investigating, and I highlight the word thoroughly down in this bottom, thoroughly investigating the causes and conditions of relating to disease. Not the disease, but the causes and the conditions. So what was the general situation in Illinois at that time? The report indicates that there were about 14,000 workers in manufacturing of bricks, marble, and other stone and glass works. The diseases that they associated with those were lung diseases, lead poisoning, and heat and cold. 65,000 workers in mines, cotton and woolen mills, fur, hair, rags, and mattresses. Dust and general vitality was identified as the health effects. 40,000 in food preparation. They identified a certain exposure to sickness as sort of the general gestalt of what the problem was. And 63,000 clothing manufacturing. Consumption, anemia, and indigestion were identified again as the risks the diseases associated with work in those. They also had a number of miscellaneous other kinds of industries, including metal industries, typesetters, leather, paper, and fabricators. So what were the kinds of exposures they were thinking about? Again, they took an industrial hygiene approach. So they identified the most common kinds of industries. Then they identified the most common kinds of illnesses, exposures, and included things like, this is a very short list. They had probably five times as many things on their list. But ammonia, arsenic, benzene, lead, mercury, sulfur, chloride. Also in the report, they identified that there are ways of alleviating these problems. So it wasn't that they were going in to try to identify exposures and then say, maybe we can figure out ways to control these. But rather, there are ways to control exposure. Let's think about that before we go in. And they identified in the report, ventilation is their number one focus for alleviating the poisons. Cleanliness and of shop and person. We'll take that as hand washing, good hand hygiene. Removal of evil conditions and by the discovery of technical processes or machinery that do not require these dangerous conditions. And I think that is in 1910's parlance, what they're really saying is let's figure out ways that we can change the work and we can change the processes so that workers aren't exposed to these things. And then fourth, you must have special measures and rules where specific poisons are introduced into the body. And again, this I think what we think about now is we have special OSHA standards depending on some of the chemicals. We have general standards, but we have specific ones to lead, or we have specific ones to benzene. And that was the sentiment of the people who created this report. The commission investigators. So who did this work? Alice Hamilton was named as the general supervisor, and she specifically investigated the lead, arsenic, and mercury parts of the study. She oversaw all aspects of the study in defining the study and the work of the other participants. She was assisted by the following 18 persons working under her direction. I did list all of those people. Hayhurst was one of those. And they had experience in the following standards: in brass foundries, zinc smelters, turpentine, engraving, lithography, printing and printing trades, plumber's trades, varnish and varnish removers, artificial flowers, cut glass, metal shops. And I think the strategy was that they wanted people that had expertise in these fields. They wanted people with expertise around the chemicals, and they wanted expertise in the industries, because they were charged with getting industries, getting workplaces to let them in voluntarily. They had no legal authority to go into any of these workplaces. And Alice Hamilton writes in her biography that one of the reasons she was so successful is that she had an ability to persuade people to let her into the workplace. And she tried to find and she instilled into many of the people that worked on the commission with her that very skill, to be persuasive and get into the workplace. In addition, Alice Hamilton has also said in her biography that she never left a workplace without getting a commitment that some change was going to take place. And that was part of her entering and part of her exiting. So I'm going to talk just very briefly about Alice Hamilton. Alice Hamilton has, in one of the writings, has been called Voices in the Wilderness. She was a physician. What made her uniquely qualified, I think, for the position to be part of this paradigm shift? She was a physician, but she was also a microbiologist. That was her passion, actually. Industrial hygienist, a government inspector, an academic, and an author. But I think first and foremost, she was an activist for human rights, social justice, and peace. She got into occupational health because of the work she did at Hull House with Jane Addams and the social justice movement. And she found occupational health as her vehicle for contributing to improving the social conditions and social justice for the people that lived in the community where she lived and worked. She was not just about counting bodies. So this is a paradigm shift. So before the beginning of the 19th century, it was really about disease. What kinds of diseases did you present, and then how did you treat those diseases? In the beginning of the 20th century, it transitioned to more about exposure. How do we? What's going on? Why are people getting sick, and how can we prevent that? It was from occupational illness to occupational exposure, from treatment to prevention, from bench research to investigations of the poisonous industries, and by the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics for ultimately Alexander's work. Her work was defined really by disciplined inquiry, evidence, objectivity, and firsthand experience. So disciplined inquiry, what do we mean by that? Alice Hamilton says in the preface to her book, "We had our young assistants reading hospital records, interviewing labor leaders, doctors, and apothecaries in working class quarters, for we must unearth actual instances of poisoning if our study was to be of value." She really believed that there were all kinds of people out there that knew about where these exposures were taking place. She didn't have all the information. She had information on the exposures and the health effects, but she wanted to rely on the people in the communities that knew where some of these things were, the work was taking place. "I was put on the trail of new lead trades, some of which I had never thought of, for instance, making freight car seals, coffin trim, and decalamania paper for pottery decoration," stuff they put on to decorate the dishes, "polishing cut glass, brass foundry, wrapping cigars in so-called tin foil, which is really lead." Thank you. Evidence. "It has been my task for many years to examine records of hospitals and dispensaries, to interview physicians in many parts of the country in my search for information about given poisonous trades. Not one hospital in 20 has records which yield the sort of information which a student of industrial toxicology craves." I think to Gwen's earlier presentation, we're making progress, but I think most of us would agree that we still have a ways to go. Objectivity. Objectivity is an interesting one. Alice Hamilton writes that she believes that industrial practitioners who worked in the industrial sector were not particularly objective and were really there to make sure that the company was interests were being served. But she also takes issue with people who are so blind to the social justice issues that they advocate without evidence and without that objectivity that she felt made her so credible with the industrial world, the academic world, and the worker community. And firsthand experience, and I think this is the one that resonates the most probably with all of us here that have worked as industrial hygienists or are industrial hygienist wannabes like many of the physicians of this time, is that it's going into the workplace and it's talking to workers and it's seeing what's happening is really what needed to happen. When she did the survey, she visited all but one of the companies in Illinois that she believed, that she had documented, used lead. She personally visited all of them because that was the way she was going to be able to know what was happening and she was going to be able to take her skills and dig out even more information about what might be going on. The Dean Commission legacy, I think it's, we would all say that it was an awareness of hazards. They did that in preparing where they were going to go visit, recognizing the hazards, prevention and control, and communication. I like this quote very much. This is a quote from in a magazine about the work that she did. "It was not public crisis, open academic, or general plague that uncovered and corrected. It was only an attention to the lies so scattered and insidious that no one gave it attention. But she solved its causation by the perfection of her science ability and made it a public matter by her consummate statesmanship. Her science, as it were, had to be sold, and she sold it." And so in that spirit, I wanted to just say, in my 1 minute left, about communication. That one thing that Alice Hamilton did, and I'm sure many of you have read her biography, have read her autobiography, the Seisserman book on the letters, Alice Hamilton letters, but she published in a lot of variety. She wrote textbooks, but she also published in popular journals. She published in Atlantic Monthly, The Survey, which later became Harper's Magazine. She wrote for as many venues as she possibly could in order to reach as many people as she could. She has over 20 government publications. She worked for the Bureau of Labor Statistics and created many documents for them, journals, magazines, and made presentations. Do I have a minute left? I have a half a minute. I'll read fast. The 3-foot square sign hung above 7 feet above the floor. The directive covered the top 1 foot of the poster and was in capital letters. Bottom 2 feet of the poster contained symbols of a pair of goggles, a respirator, gown, water taps with hands for hand washing, and the universal sign that prohibited cutting through a pistol, and a red circle with a line from 11 to 5. Three women in the laundry room wore hairnets, respirators, gloves, and aprons. These came from a mystery, as the room contained only bundles of dirty hospital linen. There were no storage cabinets, tables, chairs, or lifting equipment. Other than the bundles, the room was like a gymnasium, a blank slate for dancing or yoga. On the floor of the 3,000-square-foot room, there were almost 200 bundles of dirty hospital linen, each bundle the size of a beanbag chair, stacked in 6-foot-high mountains. The women opened each bundle to sort blankets, sheets, and hospital gowns and reorganized them into segregated bundles of blankets, sheets, and soiled linen. The women bent over to complete the sorting and moved the newly created bundles to either one of two conveyor belts or a chute that rained laundry, dirty laundry down on us from the second floor to the first floor. Today's sorting went well. No one had slipped or tripped, was stuck with a needle, or injured their back. However, the likelihood of any of these things happening was high, resulting in injuries from a devastating no work, no benefits, and the possibility of incapacitating injury and illness. Where are we in history of occupational health? Thank you.